Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome to the Friday edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. This is Buck here with my main man, Clay. Big stories to get to. The aftermath of the horrific suicide bombing attack yesterday. The Biden administration addressing it. Not sure that Joe Biden did anything to calm nerves for a lot of people watching his speech last night. We will dive into that together. Plus, you have the Supreme Court striking down the obviously, flatly unconstitutional, I mean, blatantly lawless extension of a eviction moratorium, or really the new eviction moratorium that they created. That's gone now, so landlords finally have the right to their property again. And then last night, Lieutenant Byrd of the Capitol Hill Police came out to explain why he shot Ashley Babbitt in the neck. Despite the fact that she was unarmed, she was on the other side of what was still a locked door. He gave his explanation for use of force. Lester Holt gave him a very favorable interview over on NBC, and Clay and I will be discussing that. But first, you have President Joe Biden yesterday addressing the nation, and it really honestly seemed like you had someone who in many ways represented in visual form the decline of U.S. power and prestige on the world stage. Biden seemed tired, befuddled, weak, confused. Not what you want from a commander-in-chief after a mass casualty attack like the one that occurred yesterday. 170 is the most recent number we have seen in terms of casualties. It was even more than anticipated. 170 deaths, 132 others still unidentifiable in terms of whether we're talking about men, women, children. It's an absolute grisly, horrific scene there. And we lost 13 of our own, 13 United States military personnel on this mission. Here is Joe Biden, after this happens, first of all, telling everybody that, sorry, after a war, people get left behind.
We're going to continue to try to get you out. It matters. Look, I know of no conflict as a student of history, no conflict where when a war was ending, one side was able to guarantee that everyone they wanted to be extracted from that country would get out. And think about it, folks. I think it's important. I know the American people get this in their gut.
So we're going to leave people behind, it seems to me, Clay. It's just a question of who. This is what Joe Biden is saying after what happened yesterday.
Buck, I hate that this is the situation we're in on so many different levels. But Joe Biden seems to me, and I know a lot of you out there as well, every time I see him speak, it's as if he has aged and deteriorated further. I don't know whether he's going to be able to make it 4 years. Arguably, other than people who have died in office in their first 8 months, Buck. Since Joe Biden is a student of history, I am as well. I can't think of a presidency that has been worse in its first 8 months than Joe Biden's. Now, you had some guys, you know, get pneumonia when they were giving their inaugural address and end up dying unhealthy in their first 8 months, certainly. But this is really, I think, even for the most dyed-in-the-wool Democrat believer, you can't watch Joe Biden speak right now and think to yourself, this is a guy who's got over 3 years left in the presidency. Because look at the pictures of guys who are relatively young in the 21st century who have gone into office. George W. Bush, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton bridging into the 21st century. Obviously, Trump only served one term. They age. The presidency is such a weight on your shoulders that for a 78-year-old Joe Biden, Buck, I mean, are you with me that you look at him, and this is not even analyzing necessarily the politics, but just looking at him physically, I don't see how he's going to be able to stand up for over three more years in the most difficult job in all of the country. And to say nothing of his decision making or any of those things, just physically and mentally, I don't think he's got the wherewithal to be president over three more years.
He was never impressive. This is the part of it that I think gets left behind. It's not as though Joe Biden is the aging political genius or rock star or whatever it may be. He was just a been around a long time, played the game the way he had to keep his Senate seat in Delaware guy. And now he's been thrust into this role. I mean, I think it was, he was in some ways perfect maybe to be the vice president because the Obama administration didn't want anybody who was going to overshadow or create a real challenge. They weren't going to let Hillary Clinton be the vice president. And so that's though where what happens now is we see that Joe Biden is in this role. He is the president and he's supposed to be projecting not only calm and command to the American people, but let's be honest, an air of menace to our enemies. I mean, the enemies of the United States are supposed to think this is a guy we don't want to cross. And here's where he made his pitch that, you know, we're essentially going to come after you and we're not going to allow this to go without reprisal.
To those who carried out this attack, as well as anyone who wishes America harm, know this. We will not forgive. We will not forget. We will hunt you down and make you pay. I will defend our interests and our people with every measure at my command.
Clay, two things on this. The first of all, to our conversation about how this president is doing and appears in the role. And I agree with you. And I've always said this. I don't like, you know, I try to avoid, you know, people will call him, the dementia patient president. Or something. You know, that's really serious stuff. But he's the commander in chief. He's got to be in the role. So he is deteriorating in a way we could see. And for any normal for any normal situation, you'd feel sorry. You'd want people to take care of this guy.
Yes.
Instead, he's been thrust upon us as the commander in chief. So I don't think that it comes across in the way it's supposed to as this is a guy who our enemies feel like is going to make that decision at, you know, the 3 a.m. phone call in a way that will make our enemies feel like they're on notice and that there'll be consequences. But beyond that, Clay, going after what? We're going to track down ISIS-K or whatever element of jihadism did this. That does nothing for the next 4 days, right? First of all, we're not going to track them down in the next 4 days. We don't have the assets to do it. We don't have the attention or the time right now. We got to get Americans out. But I mean, bringing this up, it just felt so hollow as soon as he said it.
I watched this, Buck, and it felt like somebody was trying to play a role and they didn't have the acting chops to pull it off. And I know a little bit about not having the acting chops to pull it off because I'm the worst actor of all time. We do skits for our television show on FS1, and everybody else on the show makes fun of me because I can't memorize lines. I can say exactly what I think unscripted, but as soon as you start having me memorize lines, I fall apart. And it felt like Joe Biden was trying to play a role in the way that he was talking there. The problem is, I don't think anyone out there actually fears Joe Biden in any way. And look, there's an obsession. There's an obsession because of Twitter with playing nice, right? With being likable and all these things. And sometimes you just got to be, and I got to be careful what word I use here because I don't want to get us FCC violated, but sometimes you got to be, and I'm just going to use it as a euphemism, sometimes you have to just be a total jerk, right? You can't always be Mr. Nice Guy. And when Joe Biden tries to pivot and show that he has a, you know, that he's willing to throw a punch, it doesn't register. Right? It just doesn't register. Just like some of you out there know you had a parent at some point who you knew was never going to spank you, like when you were a kid growing up. So the threat of a spanking, you're like, yeah, you're not going to do that. Like, that's what the government, other governments around the world, I think, see with Joe Biden.
Even the most loving family dog, you want to have capable of growling and showing teeth.
That's
when
right.
Necessary.
That's a good analogy,
too. You know, I think that's true for all of us. It's certainly true for the commander in chief here. And, you know, I use that title even more than president right now because that's really the role that he's thrust into, right? I mean, yes, he's both, but right now this is the guy who's making the top level decisions for the United States military. This is who all the generals go to. Sir, what do we do? Sir, how do we, how do we go forward? And I got to tell you, the former commander in chief before him, who every special operations guy I talk to, and I know a lot of them, every person I know who is a door kicker, a war fighter, they just felt like he was a guy who got it and would give them the orders that need to be given to protect the American people. Here's former President Trump on what he saw yesterday.
Our country is really in trouble, and it's only going to get worse. What you're watching now is only going to get worse. It can only go one way. We had something where they didn't get near us. They were petrified of us. I let them know that if they do anything, we hit them right where it hurts, which is their homes. And they know it, and they were waiting for us. They would have been very happy to let us go and take every American and anybody else we wanted, take our equipment. And for some reason, he botched the plan and took the military out first. Now, it's a very sad day for our country and a great embarrassment. Beyond embarrassment, it's a very dangerous day for our country.
I mean, Clay, we lost more American servicemen yesterday than we've lost in one day than we've lost in Afghanistan in years.
10 years. 10 years, Buck, is the number that I saw out there. 10 years. This was the deadliest day we have had in Afghanistan in 10 years. And I think it's all at the feet of Joe Biden. And unfortunately, Buck, you and I, for the past 2 weeks, had been saying this is where we were trending. And I just feel awful for all those people out there on the ground in Afghanistan trying to protect our country's interest and all of their families back here that they have a commander-in-chief. Because, Buck, you and I don't want to have an impotent commander in chief, even if you are the most dyed in the wool Republican and there's a Democrat president, or the most dyed in the wool Democrat and there's a Republican president. You don't want a weak American president. We need somebody who can uplift our interest, and Joe Biden is not that person.
I honestly wanted Joe Biden to wind down this war with the, you know, and continue on with the Trump administration trajectory here in a way that we would have had no real criticism of how it was conducted, because that would have meant Americans would have stayed alive. That would have meant our people got back home. That's what we were actually rooting for. It's not what we are getting, and we owe it to everybody in this country to be honest about that. This is a debacle. It's not a partisan talking point. It is. We'll come back into it. Clay, I also want to pose to you, if Biden did resign, would that even make you feel better? Can we come back to
that?
Yeah,
it's a great question.
He's not, by the way, he's not obviously going to resign.
Yes.
But just to play out this theoretical, we'll come back to it in a minute. But switching gears for a second here, if you're experiencing everyday pain, the kind of pain that never leaves, and you just learn to deal with it, you need to know about our sponsor, Relief Factor. Mark from Texas learned about it on the radio, and when he did, the results motivated him to write us this note. Mark wrote, "I've been hearing about Relief Factor on the radio for months. After an especially painful day dealing with my right shoulder, I decided to order the Quick Start. Within 2 weeks at 3 packs a day, the pain and tenderness in both my shoulders noticeably decreased. Thank you. Relief Factor has helped people in my family, in the Travis family, and it can very likely do the same for you and your family members. Clay, you know this is the way it goes."
No doubt. Look, my wife not only is in great physical condition, she trains people. She can do Pilates. She can do spin classes, all these things that are far too technical for me. Trust me, I've tried some of this stuff. And the result is when you go hard and work out hard, you have a lot of aching. You also, as you age, have more natural aching. Hundreds of thousands of people, including my wife, have ordered Relief Factor, and about 70% of them go on and order more. You can join the more than 500,000 people and order the 3-week quick start for only $19.95. Go to ReliefFactor.com right now. You can call also 800-4-RELIEF to get the $19.95 3-week quick start developed for you. Go to ReliefFactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. Relief Factor. Feel the difference. Welcome back in. Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. We are rolling through the Friday edition of the program. Open line Fridays, by the way. We'll take some of your calls during the course of the program. Alex Berenson, by the way, is going to join us. We're trying to basically get him slotted in on Fridays as all this chaos surrounding COVID continues. We've obviously been focused a lot on Afghanistan this week, but we're going to talk with Alex Berenson, Jack Carr, for the latest on the ground in Afghanistan to start off the second hour of the program. But Buck Sexton asked a good question as we went to break. Would you even feel better if Joe Biden stepped down, knowing that Kamala Harris is waiting in the wings? And I'll answer that question. I'm also curious what Buck thinks about it. But first, this to me was, it was not a great press conference and speech from Joe Biden at all yesterday afternoon. But this to me was the personification of why Joe Biden is in over his head. Listen to this as he prepared to take questions from the media. This is Joe Biden yesterday.
Ladies and gentlemen, they gave me a list here. The first person I was instructed to call on was Kelly O'Donnell of NBC.
Clay, what the heck is that?
It's so unbelievably embarrassing that the president of the United States cannot actually pick his own people to call on. And even if you have a list, which we know he does, because there's been pictures sometimes that go out virally of a list of people that Joe Biden is going to call in and order. I just wonder about all of this in terms of his mental faculties. Look, you can criticize Donald Trump, and God knows he got criticized for everything, but he would stand and take questions sometimes for hours from the media, calling on people both favorable and unfavorable to him. And all of his press people came out and said, we never gave him a list and said, hey, you're going to call on this person first.
It was like Gulliver with the Lilliputians trying to, you know, hold them down and attack him. I mean, Trump was they would there'd be a frenzy during these gaggles and sprays and these things they do, and Trump would just look. It was one of the more magnificent things of his presidency. It was just one after another. You know, you be quiet. You not true. You
that's
but
right.
He would take it. Joe Biden. It's all this is basement Biden who is now having to walk around and act like he actually knows what the heck is going on.
And what's happening here, Buck, is they know what the questions are going to be, so they are prepping him for, hey, you're going to get asked by this person what that question is. And I wonder on some level, I don't know where the teleprompter is or whether the media can see it as he is speaking, but I feel like a lot of these questions, they have his answer already typed out for him. And he is reading most of it off of the prompter, too.
Whether
right?
it's Biden or any other politician, if you don't get them off script, if they're just going to try to filibuster by reading talking points, you're never going to find out anything. Just remember, that should be a general principle here. You'll never learn anything. And Clay, that I just want to know, you feel better if Kamala Harris is Commander-in-Chief next week, theoretically? You do?
I've spent a lot of time. Yeah, it's such a great question because I spent a lot of time like, I feel like Kamala Harris is more mentally there, but I think she's going to make worse decisions even than Joe Biden.
Let's throw it to the audience. Kamala or Joe, you have to pick. You have no choice. I'm curious what they'd say.
I am as well. And you know what I'm not curious about is who has the best products out there for your home? The answer is Mike Lindell. He has got us hooked up all throughout the house. We have towel sets, slippers, robes, mattress toppers, Giza sheets. All of it, our bed, wife and I, and also all the kids in the household. We trust Mike Lindell to give us a great night's sleep. And right now they have the sell of the year on the Giza Dream Sheets. I was just out in Vegas, Buck, stayed in a lot of hotels. I got to tell you, the Giza Dream Sheets in my house, better than the most expensive sheets in Vegas hotels. And right now you can get 50% off with the promo code Clay and Buck. 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener specials, get the Giza Dream Sheets for as low as $49.99 with the code Clay and Buck. You can also call 800-792-3269. Go to MyPillow.com today and get hooked up.
Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. As we said to you, we got some big stories to get today. Of course, continuing coverage and analysis of the massive suicide bombing attack at Kabul Airport yesterday. We'll be joined by former Navy SEAL Jack Carr, friend of mine, great guy, best-selling author in the second hour of the program. Third hour of the program, we'll have Alex Berenson on everything going on right now. Booster shots getting moved up sooner, it seems. Biden just spoke about this. Get ready for those booster shots, folks. Get ready for the mandates in schools. Get ready for corporate mandates. They're going to start with the hospital systems, and then they're going to go all across the country. I don't know. Maybe we should try to stop it, or else just wait. You're going to be faced with lose your job or get the shot, and get the shot again, and get the shot again. But I don't know. I'd like to have us hold the line somewhere on this. That's what I'm hoping to do, hoping to find a way we can start that somewhere. But interview last night on NBC News with Lieutenant Michael Byrd, who it's been rumored, I think, on the internet for a while that he was, in fact, the individual involved here. But he is the Capitol Hill police officer who shot Ashley Babbitt in the neck. Now, Clay and I, you know, I've had some background in law enforcement and baseline tactical training. Clay, obviously, is a lawyer. We wanted to go through some of this. And really, first of all, they couldn't have tried to make it a more favorable platform for Officer Byrd's narrative. You'll hear that yourself. We want to take this, though, piece by piece and address how, I mean, for me, this is, the whole thing is outrageous because the politics involved are quite clear in terms of how this has been handled. But let's start with Michael Byrd saying that he showed tremendous courage in the shooting.
Of course I do. That is a very vital point, and it's something that is frightening. I believe I showed the utmost courage on January 6th, and it's time for me to do that now.
The utmost courage, Clay. Have you heard any of the officers involved in fatal shootings that got a lot of national attention, and including times when an assailant was reaching for a gun or going for a knife? Have you heard any of them ever say, well, I showed tremendous courage in shooting that person?
No, and if they did, we already have protests, but there would be mass rioting in the streets. I want to hear all these quotes, and I want our audience to hear them all, because I think with everything going on with Afghanistan, reasonably, this story has kind of slid under the radar. But I want to keep playing these quotes, and I just want you, as you listen to these quotes, just think what the reaction would be from Black Lives Matter if a white police officer who shot an unarmed protester had said all of these things, what the reaction would be compared to the comparative crickets in response to this. Let's just keep playing these clips because, again, I think a large part of our audience has not heard all of these quotes. And certainly, as you said, Buck, this gentleman had not even been named prior to this interview that he just decided to do.
Here he is discussing that he believed Ashley Babbitt was posing an imminent threat. Remember, this is an unarmed woman still on the other side of the door, trying to break in and open a door. He has the gun drawn for quite, he's plenty of time. He can see exactly what's going on. It's on video. We have video of this encounter. Here is what he says.
I had been yelling and screaming as loud as I was, please stop, get back, stop. We had our weapons drawn.
We see your arm out there for a considerable amount of time. Were you wavering?
I was taking a tactical stance. You're ultimately hoping that your commands will be complied with. And unfortunately, they were not.
What did you think this individual was doing at that moment?
She was posing a threat to United States House of Representatives.
All right, Lawyer Clay. She's posing a threat. How was she posing more of a threat than we can see in the video? There are people all pressed against the door. So under this use of force justification that's very specific, it seems, to this circumstance. And by the way, I've been all morning, I've been checking in with law enforcement friends of mine.
Yes.
Who are back the blue guys. And they're the one, they say you hit a Capitol Hill police officer in the head with a rock or something, you know, you got to serve time. They back law enforcement. They say this is something else. Clay, if that's the use of force justification, could this officer have unloaded his whole clip and shot eight people up against that door? They were all posing a threat.
In theory, yes. In theory, that's the point, Buck, right? And again, I don't like when we put ourselves in a position where we have to microanalyze every single police officer in the moment. But I do think that we need to apply consistent standards that are equal to all police officers. And we've said this for a long time. Look, I am a steadfast believer that we need more police officers. Defund the police, the dumbest argument that's made in the 21st century in American political life. But every police officer is not perfect. And certainly, I can't even remember, Buck, hardly ever a police officer come out and basically call himself a hero for shooting an unarmed woman or man for that matter. I can't remember it ever happening before. And I'm thinking to myself, what would the response have been in the media if that had ever happened? I think we have one more clip of this gentleman who fired the shot that killed Ashley Babbitt that we should play, where he says basically, Buck, if I'm not mistaken, that he saved countless lives based on his choice.
Well, it's disheartening. If he was in the room or anywhere and I'm responsible for him, I was prepared to do the same thing for him and his family.
Would you have his back today if you were so assigned?
I sure would, because it's my job.
Sorry, Clay, that's on me. I fired the wrong one there. But that was in response to the question about Donald Trump saying that he's a murderer. Trump said that, yeah, Lieutenant Byrd's a murderer, but to the one that you brought up, he did say he saved countless
According
lives.
To law, it does not. I know based on my training and my policy, what I did was appropriate.
Have you continued to question your actions that day?
I knew that day. I followed my training, and I spent countless years preparing for such a moment. You ultimately hope that moment never occurs, but you prepare as best you can. I know that day I saved countless lives.
How could he have saved countless lives? Let's unpack this, Clay.
That's the dumbest and most ridiculous statement that he made in the entire interview to me.
There are hundreds of rioters, and as we know, a lot of them were walking around taking selfies.
A lot of them were grandmas with selfie sticks.
They had selfie sticks. But okay, there were some rioters who were violent with police and destroyed property. That is a fact. That's true. Okay. How many of them actually tried to use lethal force and succeeded in doing it against anybody? The answer is zero. They didn't actually kill anybody. So by shooting, what he's saying is by shooting Ashley Babbitt in the neck, there are rioters in other parts of the facility. There are rioters, you know, swarming the Capitol complex. He saved countless lives? Really? How does that make any sense?
It's a total lie. And what I would say is just picture, this is what I want everybody out there listening to us right now to picture. Pretend that a police officer shoots a protester during Black Lives Matter. And let's make it a white police officer who shoots a young, unarmed black person. What would the reaction be in the media if that police officer did a public interview and claimed that he saved countless lives? There would be mass protests in the streets, and the outrage meter would be off the charts. Yet this quote comes out. Sit down interview, and I bet many of our listeners right now, the first and only time they will hear that quote will be from us on this show, Buck. I really think that. I'm not seeing it played anywhere else, hardly.
Clay, there were thousands of officers who were wounded, some quite seriously, over the course BLM protests.
Who were being directly attacked.
By being physically assaulted by protesters. That is what happened.
Yes.
Now, if you're being punched or kicked or hit with a rock by a protester, that's pretty clear that you're under threat. And yet, as you and I both know, especially with the dynamic you described, if a BLM protester, particularly a young black protester, was shot from 15 feet away for refusing a command, which is essentially an anti-trespass command from a law enforcement officer, there'd be buildings burned down.
That's
and you'd
right.
have CNN standing in front of them saying,
and by the way, that officer would 100% be charged with a crime.
We don't really need these buildings anyway. It's just we're just burning buildings down now because people
mostly
are
peaceful
upset.
Protest. What I am arguing for, and this is me putting my lawyer hat on, Buck, is, and I know this frustrates a lot of people out there, I still believe in the idea of justice being blind. That's why Lady Justice, when you look at the scales of justice, is wearing a blindfold. Because we have to look at all the facts, and what I was trained in law school is only three things matter in every case: the facts, the facts, the facts. The facts are now out entirely about this case. And are we applying the same standards of justice to this Capitol Hill police officer as we would in other circumstances? I think the answer is we are not. And the reason why we're not is because of politics. And I understand that Ashley Babbitt was not without flaw. right? I'm not proclaiming that she was 100% innocent in this scenario. But I understand why her family has filed this $10 million wrongful death lawsuit and why they're looking around and saying, wait a minute, if you change the politics in this scenario, our son or daughter protesting for Black Lives Matter would be a martyr, and there would be significant charges probably brought against this police officer. But in this situation, that's not occurring. And I think these are all legitimate and serious and real questions, which people in our position should be discussing in an honest fashion with their audience. And I bet, Buck, we are one of the only shows out there that will actually do this anywhere today.
And we will continue to do so. We've also got coming up Jack Carr, former Navy SEAL, to talk about the list that was allegedly handed over, or now reported, and I think it's been confirmed, handed over of all U.S. personnel and Afghans who were helping. So stupid. I mean, as an ex-CIA guy, handing out lists with names like this is just, you think to yourself, how could anyone have such poor operational security? We'll talk to Jack about that, and also we got Berenson on COVID. We'll take your calls, because we got a lot of people weighing in, Clay, on Kamala versus Joe. If you have to pick, don't call in and say, you know, of course, I want Trump too. But if you have to pick Kamala or Joe, but let's switch gears here for a moment, because this year marks the 20th anniversary of 9/11. 20 years since nearly 3,000 innocent civilians were killed by terrorists on our soil. Inspired from that day, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been honoring America's heroes ever since. They're bringing hope to families across the country by giving 200 mortgage-free homes to heroes and their families. Gold Star and fallen first responder families with young children are getting their mortgage paid off so they can stay in their homes where their memories are. Clay, it's an amazing organization.
Yeah, and that's not all. In an emotional tribute to the fallen, Frank Siller's Never Forget Walk is taking him more than 500 miles by foot to connect the 9/11 sites. You can help Tunnel to Towers honor America's heroes as we approach the 20th anniversary of 9/11 by donating $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org.
Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. We are going to get to some calls here. We said it's Open Line Friday, and we mean it. David in Davis County, Utah. What have you got?
We're going to have to keep Joe until after this Afghan disaster is done. If we don't, the Taliban and ISIS-K will gain the ultimate cachet. We removed an American president, and I think it would make things even worse.
It's an interesting argument, I think, Buck. My thoughts on this would be that we're not removing Biden because of what happened in Afghanistan. We're removing him overall for the incompetence at the border, for inflation surging, for the murder rates hitting all-time high. In other words, all of these adding together are what demonstrates Biden's incompetence. This is just the latest example of that. And by the way, even before the terror attack, Afghanistan was incompetent. This was just, unfortunately, that additional disaster.
Yeah. Thank you, David, though. Interesting point of view on that. I think he's right. I mean, that would definitely play into, look, the only way Biden goes is if he resigns, right? That there's no mechanism. There's no universe in which the Democrats, I don't care. You could find Joe Biden on video doing anything. Doesn't matter. Democrats are not going to impeach their guy. So he would have to step down, Clay. He's not going to do it. But if he did do it, there is that component of where the Taliban would say we even brought an American presidency to its knees, which they're kind of doing anyway.
Well, and I think also the other angle is I'm not sure Democrats want Kamala in office, right?
No.
Because she's so much less popular than Biden. That was the big theory coming into the election, was that if Biden won, he would resign and he would allow Kamala to run as the incumbent in 2024. And I think there was a fear that she would be a stronger incumbent, certainly, than he would. Because let's be honest, I would put the chances that Joe Biden is able to run in 2024 at zero right now. Like, I just,
wow.
I don't see zero.
Look at
like,
you,
I don't
bold.
I don't see any way based on his press conferences and his public availability and the decline that I feel like we're seeing on a week-to-week and month-to-month basis in his mental and physical faculties. I don't think there's any way. And Buck, look, this is the sad thing about using the campaign from the basement. I think that there's no way Joe Biden wins if he has to go on the road and campaign.
Right.
Because I think his frailty would have been more noticeable.
He was unique to the situation of lockdown year and COVID, a guy everyone knew and they could say, oh, but it'll all be normal and he's good old Joe. And then they hit him in the basement. But this is a little bit like in Ghostbusters when they say, you know, choose the form of the Destructor and you have
to think.
And then you get the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Well, you know, it's like we choose the form of the Destructor in either Joe Biden or Kamala Harris here. Dale in Northampton says he'd rather have. Well, Dale, you tell us.
Yeah.
Fire away, bud.
Yeah, yeah, what?
Sorry. I say Camilla can't do anything worse than this guy has done. He's proven to be a total failure. She might laugh a lot, but I don't think she'd laugh about American citizens dying or the Afghans dying.
All right, Dale. Dale's going a vote for Kamala. Let's see. We get Lonnie in Beaumont, Texas. Lonnie, who you got?
Well, I hate to say this, but Hillary Clinton.
Wow.
Hello.
Hillary.
This is an interesting question. If we made people vote, I actually think Hillary is wildly more of a effective leader than either Joe Biden or Kamala Harris would be, right? If you had to pick one of those three, like you can toss in Nancy Pelosi as well.
I can't believe it. I mean,
you agree with me, right? Like if you had to pick.
Wow, this is rough, man. This is
if
like
if you had to pick somebody to respond to.
This is
to
like,
what's
do I
want to
cut
right
off
now?
My toe or my finger, Clay?
It's a tough call.
We got to get back to a Jack Carr here, former Navy SEAL, in just a few minutes. We'll come back to it.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.